of, and probably will remain in the middle of for yet a little bit, maybe one more time, the Animamin, which reads, Animamin b'emunah shleima, I believe with complete faith, Shabir Yisbar Shemay, that the Creator, blessed is His name, Gemil Teiv l'shemrei mitzvaysa, rewards with good those who observe His commandments. And punishes those who violate His commandments. So we asked a number of questions last time, one of which was, what is the nature of this reward and punishment? We know that there are some faith systems in which these rewards resemble merely an exaggeration over an amplification of earthly delights. And it's clear that we view these things with considerable contempt. So what is this reward? And what is the punishment? There's a controversy about the way in which Schar and Onesh, reward and punishment, come about. So there's one approach, one shita that sees it as being, for want of a better word, automatic or somewhat mechanistic. In other words, that the master of the world programmed the world in such a way that when a person does good, that every good act creates its own reward. And ultimately, a person becomes the recipient of all of the good which they have done. Conversely, every violation of Hashem's will creates its own punishment, its own vengeance. And the ultimate result is that a person becomes the object of all of the evil which he has created. This approach one will find articulated at great length in the Avodas HaKodesh by Rav Meir ben Gabay, who was one of the foremost early Kabbalists, and in large measure supported by the Shelah HaKodesh. Although, I think we will find in the course of our discussion, neither one of these systems is really exclusive of the other. The second approach is that it is it's extremely personal. The Ramban, in one instance, when he talks about the rewards which are promised in the Torah for doing good, says that all of these things are what he calls nisi, that they are all really kind of independent miracles, that they are not causal, that they don't follow a systematic or logical causative relationship, that if you do this, then this happens. But in each case, the Almighty and His wisdom chooses to respond for the good with reward, to the evil with punishment, but that it's all individually chosen. Each act receives its own independent assessment, its own independent reward. In this little volume called Fundamentals in Faith, which is a distillation of Rabbi Weinberg, the Rosh Yeshiva of Baltimore, of his lectures on the Yud Gimel Ikrim, there are a few paragraphs over here which I would like to read to you verbatim, because they're best, I think, conveyed in that fashion. Weinberg is responding specifically to the way in which the Rambam articulates this this principle. The Almighty knows the actions of people and does not ignore them. Not like those who say God has abandoned the earth, but rather, as it says, the Almighty saw, quotes one of the cases, the Almighty saw that there was great evil perpetrated by man in the land. Or elsewhere, the Almighty said the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great. All of which attests to this principle. Brings another quote, but the point is that the Almighty knows those who serve Him and those who transgress and rewards and punishes accordingly. The of Weinberg, in his commentary to this, makes the following critique of the mechanistic or the automatic approach. In other words, this concept that man creates automatically, in other words, every good action is vested with its own programmed reward. Every violation, every transgression has its own punishment invested within it or programmed within it. He says as follows. It isn't really necessary for God to be aware of man's actions in order for there to be reward and punishment. Reward and punishment could have been built into creation such that reward would be the automatic consequence of fulfilling a commandment and punishment the consequence of violating one. This alternative reflects a model world into which justice was programmed as a natural outgrowth of various actions. In this system, there would be no need for man to be cognizant of God's awareness of his actions, since even if the Almighty did not know our actions, reward and punishment would exist as an automatic response to man's behavior. Indeed, some scholars maintain this position, and the footnote directs us to review the Shulchan HaKadosh. The Rambam, however, by including the tenth principle, asserts that man must know that God is aware of his actions in order to exist with a sense of meaning. Why is this awareness necessary? So he follows. There is a difference between an action motivated by an awareness of the consequences which automatically follow it and an action motivated by an awareness of the reaction of the Almighty. It is the difference between acting out of prudence or acting out of love. It is the difference between acting for oneself and acting for another. In a programmed world where consequences are automatic, the individual has only himself to consider. In a non-programmed world, man considers and relates to God's response. The Almighty's awareness of man's actions and his responding to them with what man views as reward and punishment is a sign that he cares. It signifies that one's actions make a difference. Considering the alternative, the model world where justice is built automatically into creation, the promise of an impersonal reward and the threat of punishment would not be enough to motivate man to pursue the morally correct action. This insight is the message that is conveyed through this principle. It is imperative to know that God responds to man's actions because He will respond to me. I can feel that my behavior makes a difference. This difference gives meaning, purpose, and justification to life. Life has meaning when one has a relationship with the Almighty, and this relationship is predicated upon the reality of His response to our actions. A built-in reward and punishment system indicates indifference and would destroy any possibility of a relationship between man and God. So that's the critique. The suggestion over here is that the only way in which a person really has meaning in life is if there is a relationship with God. In an impersonal system, the suggestion is, or the implication is, that that God has provided for an individual to receive his just reward, or just punishment, or both, as the case usually is, but that that he is not really involved. That's the implication that Rabbi Weinberg is responding to. He says that the mechanistic system allows for, doesn't necessarily mandate, but allows for the fact that God is not involved, that there's no relationship here. Whereas the Rambam, by saying, Shehaveri Zbor Shema Yigemel Tev, actually it's not Rambam, this is the author of the third Yud Gimel Ikrim, but it's a reflection of the Rambam, that the Almighty is the Gimel Tev, he is the one who is the dispatcher of the good, and he is the one who punishes the evildoer, that there is something personal going on here. There's a relationship going on. And that really becomes the fulcrum which makes the difference between whether or not an individual is going to choose to do what is morally correct or will ignore that. As we merge the two systems, the initial differences will be more intelligible. So let's maybe leave it for a little bit and come back to it. The Torah does spell out rather elaborately in a number of instances rewards and punishment for doing good or violating Hashem's will. Both in Parshas Bechukosai and in Parshas Kisavai, we have some all too explicit a litany of things which befall Kol Yisrael for violating Hashem's Torah. And not enough for many of us. Not enough of the great things that we get for following his will. But as the case may be, all of these things are physical rewards. They're all material kinds of things, and we're going to have to address the question why Hashem does not explicitly speak in the Torah about the rewards of hereafter. Our sages tell us that there is no such thing as reward in this world. Schar mitzvah b'hayah al-malek. There is no such thing as Hashem rewarding a person for the good that he does in this world. Which then begs the question, so what is the Torah telling us when it tells us all of the good that we will receive, all the blessings we will receive, all the good fortune that will come our way if we do what Hashem wants of us, expects of us. Rav Dessler in his Michtam Elio, in the very first, in the opening pages, makes reference to the comment of our sages when they say, Yofesh Shachas Shokir Esruach B'Elam Haba Mikol Chayu El Maza, that the pleasure that the person has in one moment of the world to come is more than all of the pleasures of this world. And he goes on to say what all of the pleasures of this world mean. He says if you were to take all of the pleasures of an individual and distill them, take them, all the pleasures from his entire life and distill them into one moment. If you were to take all of the pleasures of all the people that live at any given time, the billions of people that live, and you were to distill them into a moment of pleasure. He said, that's still not kol chayei ha'olam hazeh, that's still not all of the pleasures of this world. So he says, you would have to take all of the delight, all of the pleasure, all of the ecstasy experienced from the beginning of the history of mankind until the very end, of all of the people who ever lived, and you were to bring it together, and a person were to experience it, it would still not equal one moment of the kiras ruach, of the pleasure and the ecstasy, one moment of the world to come. And simply, this world does not have the wherewithal to allow for the experience of a pleasure of that magnitude. So there is no such thing as being able to receive or to experience the reward for a mitzvah in this world simply because it surpasses and transcends any of the vessels or any of the limitations that exist in this world. What then does it mean? Well, for one thing, the Rambam says that what it signifies is the fact that these are not a reward for the mitzvah so much as they represent the Almighty removing all of the obstructions to our being able to pursue our spiritual aspirations, so that it's really impossible for a person to devote themselves wholeheartedly and completely to the pursuit of spirituality, since we have things like earning a living, and since we have things like sickness, chas v'shalom, or other forms of deprivation and suffering. So the Almighty tells us, if Klal Yisrael is doing what it should, there won't be any such thing. The Klal Yisrael will not have any enemies. They will constantly be victorious in whatever confrontations take place. They will be blessed with great fortune and the crops and people doing their work and so on. So that they will be completely free to pursue their spiritual goals without distraction. That is the significance. Not that this is a reward for the mitzvahs, but that this is simply Hashem's saying, if you're doing what you should, then it makes it clear that you're on the right track, and if you're on the right track, I'll see to it that you'll have an unobstructed shot. In addition to this, the Balaam and Kabbalah don't so much dispute that as they indicate that when Klal Yisrael is doing what they should, that what happens is that this allows for the transmission of Hashem's blessing to reach this world without being diverted, that Hashem, who is perfectly good and is desirous of doing good, is enabled by the way in which we interact with the cosmos when we're doing what's right. We open all of the pipelines, we open all of the highways of God's emanations of goodness, so that it reaches this world undiluted, undiminished, unobstructed. And that's essentially what the Torah is telling us. Not that this is the reward for the mitzvah so much as that when we're doing what's right, the world is in total balance. It's an organism which is completely healthy. All the arteries are open. All of the nurturance is taking place in exactly the way it's supposed to take place. Whereas conversely, the practice of immorality occludes, obstructs those arteries of Hashem's delivering the emanations of force and power and brightness and goodness to earth, and they end up being diverted to the forces of evil, who then use or appropriate these forces to darken the world with evil and violence and so on, suffering, pain. Now, all of that really is more communal. It's more social. It's more general. It seems to address things in their social configuration. But what about the individual? It's clear that even in a society in which all things are going good, that we sometimes find. We find individuals who we find tzaddik v'ra'loi, we find the righteous person who suffers, we find the rosh of a tevla, the wicked person who prospers. So both in the case of the individual and to some extent to the public domain, there are additional dimensions that I'd like to explore some of those dimensions. I'm going to concentrate in the main tonight on reward. And we'll talk about about punishment next time. I just would like to add one note or one observation, one commentary on Rabbi Weinberg's position. Rabbi Weinberg implies, he says it fairly clearly, that repeat the sentence because it's some significance. Considering the alternative, the model world where justice is built automatically into creation, the promise of an impersonal reward and the threat of punishment would not be enough to motivate man to pursue the morally correct action. Now, what's the supposition over here? In most cases, all beings are driven by a survival instinct. What he calls earlier prudence. People act in very pragmatic ways. They seek their own good. They protect themselves from harm. What would, in a mechanistic system or an automatic system, what would it be that would dissuade or might allow for a person to ignore that personal harm or fail to seek that personal good? Even if it were to be mechanistic, it implies that that it's not enough. I think that part of the response lies in the fact that there are people who are self-destructive, people who feel that they are contemptible, that they are worthless, that it doesn't make any difference what happens to them, that they'll enjoy the shortfall or the immediate gratification of the now, rather than wait for the eternal good of the future. And behind it really lies the observation or the opinion of oneself, which is inherently I'm worthless, or worse yet, I'm worthy of suffering. So it doesn't make any difference what I do, and I can choose to do whatever I please, even to bring suffering upon myself. What really stands behind the validity of Rabbi Weinberg's observation is the fact that when there is a system in which someone cares, that an individual thinks differently about themselves, that very basis which allows for an individual to dismiss themselves or to subject themselves haphazardly to suffering, to pain, because they hold themselves to be contemptible, crumbles before this caring, especially if the individual who cares, this entity who cares, is the Almighty Himself. In view of that fact, a person sees themselves differently, finds themselves worthwhile, and sees themselves as deserving of something better. And it is that caring which changes the focus from it doesn't make any difference what I do, to the conclusion, I really deserve better and I should make a wise decision. I'd like to go back to a, briefly, to something that we've said. We may have said it somewhere during the course of the, of these discussions in faith. But we certainly have discussed it many, many times in a variety of different sessions and contexts. When an individual does something right, when he does something which is good, when he does something which is consistent with the divine will, there are three different vectors, three different points of reference, three different centers where this good act affects. One is, as we've discussed, that it does affect the balance, the synergy, the harmony of the universe. It opens up these cosmic highways. It opens up all the arteries and the conduits to the unbroken and undiminished flow of God's beneficence. Two, it actually creates forces of good. We speak about a saneger, about the fact that every mitzvah creates a positive force, an angel of good that becomes a champion for us, that becomes a spokesman on our behalf, that becomes a powerful line that that runs interference for us, that blesses us, that takes an interest in our benefit. The third center is that it invests excellence in the doer itself, that the individual somehow becomes spiritually stronger, sharper, deeper, capable of greater sensitivity, has a greater clarity, a greater breadth, a greater command of perception and the ability to process the world in a manner which is consistent with his spiritual good. What are the predicates? What are the premises of this excellence? How does it work? So we could use any kind of a professional school model. Medical school. A person wants to become a doctor. A person wants to become an engineer. A person wants to become an architect. There are courses that you have to take. Every course brings you closer to the end of becoming a doctor. You know more. You become more skilled. You become more intuitive. You somehow, each thing by its exposure to knowledge or practice, as the case may be, enables an individual to take a step closer to becoming this ultimate goal, whatever it is, the end goal being either a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer. And one might argue similarly that every act which is consistent with Torah, which is consistent with Hashem's Rotzeh, brings one, it's like you take a course, you become somehow more knowledgeable, you've somehow invested yourself with either some information or some spiritual light, which brings you still closer to this this goal of excellence. I think that the question still remains: how is it happening? What's the mechanism here? What's the dynamic? So I would like to re-examine with you something that we've spoken of many times, which is man's inherent essence. What is a person's essence? So we've discovered that a person's essence derives from the purpose of creation. Hashem's Ratzon HaTov, Hashem's goodwill, his perfectly goodwill, decreed that there would be a beneficiary for Hashem's goodness. That is man's essence. The essence of this creation called Adam is that man will be a recipient, that man will be a receiver, that man will be a receptacle, a vessel, a capturer, a beneficiary of Hashem's goodness. That's the essence. And that's one of the most powerful reasons that people are driven in the pursuit of pleasure, because it is our inherent nature to seek pleasure, because that's what we are. We are created to receive, and to receive the ultimate pleasure. The problem is that in our short-sightedness, is that we have the drive, and that we seek the wrong deliverers. We seek the wrong system. We seek the kinds of pleasures which are corruptible and ultimately turn the there's a word here, but I'm missing what the word is. Okay, you get the idea. If then it was Hashem's intention to create the beneficiary of something that he might bestow goodness upon, what is that goodness? So Ramchal in his Derech Hashem and elsewhere articulates this very clearly. The goodness which Hashem would want to deliver, would want to give this beneficiary, would be the ultimate goodness, because Hashem is ultimately and perfectly good. What then could this reward be then other than the greatest perfection, the greatest wisdom, the greatest strength, the greatest love, the ultimate goodness, which is Hashem Himself? So the design of creation was to create a recipient for Hashem's perfection, and Hashem's ultimate goodness. If that's the case, then we are forced to say that potentially that God invested this recipient with all the tools that would allow him to experience this ultimate goodness. If we are to be able to appreciate God's wisdom, then somehow we must have the capacity to build ourselves up so that we can understand and we can be responsive to Hashem's wisdom, that we will have the depth and the breadth and the sensitivity and all the dimensions of wisdom that allow us to appreciate His wisdom, and similarly to appreciate His love, to appreciate His goodness, to appreciate His strength, to appreciate His light, all of the things that go into Hashem's perfection. So that in order for us to live up to this potential or this essence, this substance, that we have to be able to appreciate, to experience, to understand, and to embrace his perfection. Let's take an infant. An infant is very self-absorbed. An infant doesn't know that there is anything else out there. It knows that it feels cold, it feels hot, it feels wet, it feels hungry, it feels thirsty. And the infant does things to try to draw attention to those things. And it finds out that there are some things that bring about a level of response and comfort. So that initially it cries, and then eventually it will learn to do other things. It will smile, it will gurgle, and it will do things that it knows pleases the deliverer of the things that make them feel comfortable or gives them pleasure. They're completely self-absorbed. As the child grows, their level of self-absorption becomes a little bit more sophisticated. So rather than asking for things that it can take care of himself, he now looks for other things, toys, candies, a little bit older, money, a little bit older, cars, clothes, whatever. As the individual gets older, their needs become more sophisticated, but they can remain self-absorbed. There's a point in maturity, hopefully, some people get there, where an individual realizes that there's a greater gift than things which are exterior. That is, which people give people things that they can then enjoy. They realize that there's something called a relationship. And that in that relationship, there is something which strikes very, very deep chords of resonance in their being. That there is something called affection. That there is something called respect. That there is a sharing of good things that multiplies the appreciation of the good things. That there is a sharing of the painful things, which somehow diminishes the sharpness or the burdensomeness of those difficult or those painful things. The ideal or the optimal kind of relationship is something which is reflected in that which we call intimacy. And intimacy is really dependent on the ability to give oneself up to another. Indeed, there are some forms of dysfunction in intimacy. I'm speaking now in the physical expression of intimacy, which really derived from the inability of a person to give themselves up to the other or for the other. It may be built on distrust. It may be built on low self-esteem, which leaves a person afraid that in surrendering themselves to someone else, that they will disappear and that they will no longer have any sense of individual worth or an individual identity. But there is a form of dysfunction which obstructs intimacy because this act of giving oneself up doesn't take place. This experience that we call intimacy, as it takes place within the human realm, really derives from the divine paradigm. Because when we speak about the reward, which is really the objective and the goal of everything that we work for and toil for within Theta, that reward really is a relationship with our Creator that maximizes the Almighty's intent of our being the beneficiary of His goodness. So rather than Hashem giving us things, whether it's material things like riches and other worldly pleasures, Hashem, who is perfection itself, is desirous of giving us of Himself and wants that to take place in the most powerful way. If that's to be the case, then it must enable us to be as close, as intimate as possible with Hashem. But what more intimate way, what more powerful way to experience Hashem than to destroy all of the barriers which come between us and Hashem? The only way that we can do that is in an act of surrender, to negate ourselves to His essence. It's what they call the chelik, the part, recognizing the whole from which it is taken, and the desire of reattaching itself, of becoming part of the whole, of the flame, the little flame jumping, leaping into the torch, which is its source, which is an actual experiencing of, an actual partaking of the essence, as it yields itself and transcends all barriers and all separations. It's this experience which is the schar. It's this experience which is the reward. It's this experience which is the end, which is the genuine reward of Teila and Mitzvahs. The ability commensurate with how we have developed our receiving capacities, the way in which we have defined. Hashem has invested ultimate potential within us. But we have, obviously, by the actions that we have chosen during the course of our lives, we have perfected or we have developed our ability to behold Hashem's wisdom in the measure in which we have toiled. Our ability to understand His light, to behold it in the measure in which we have toiled. To be able to appreciate His goodness in the measure in which we have invested consistent with His will. And by the way, here we're talking about, you have to remember that we're not just talking about the things themselves that we do, because an action is a very complex thing. It's not only the act itself, it's not only the performance of the mitzvah itself, it's the emotion of the mitzvah, it's the preparation for the mitzvah, it's the intellectual component. And the mitzvah is a very rich entity. And every aspect of this entity which deepens the mitzvah itself develops concomitantly the our abilities to eventually be the recipients of Hashem's, of this experience of uniting with Hashem. So the inner gist, the core, the substance of every mitzvah, whether it's the study of Torah, or it's taking a lulav and an esreg, or whether it's the Shabbos lecht, or whether it's taking challah, or whether it's a tefillah or a tchina, whatever the case is, whatever it is that we do, which is a spiritually chosen act, the gist of that is Hashem, I want to be with you. Hashem, I long for a relationship with you. That's what we're saying. Now, it takes a lot of different forms. In much the same way that a husband and wife or any two close friends will express their appreciation for one another, the desire to nurture the relationship by gestures which carry this message. Every mitzvah becomes our saying to Hashem Yisbarach, I want a relationship with you. And to that extent, when we make that statement, Hashem, whose entire creation has taken place for that reason, invests us with that additional level of excellence that he carries us forward in an act and in a progression which simultaneously makes us spiritually better, finer, nobler, and really advances us to a level at which we stand higher and closer to Himself. In a fairly distant, but nonetheless somewhat analogous way, if there was someone who lived at the North Pole in the kind of brutal cold weather in which the only way to survive is with all kinds of layers and layers of clothes and furs and whatnot to protect themselves against the cold. And this person learns that there is a place that is full of light and brightness and warmth, where one can completely, as it were, surrender themselves to be embraced by the rays of the sun, someplace near the equator. And so they begin to make this journey in every which way, by airplane, by train, by car, by horse and wagon, by foot, by dog sleds, whatever. Some ways go faster, some steps are smaller, some are more time-consuming, some are more painful, whatever. There are all kinds of steps to reach this goal. And as they progress on this journey, they discover that there are places of brightness, places which aren't quite so cold, and they're able to divest themselves of one of their fur coats. And they proceed to be able, progressively, to relieve themselves of all of these barriers until such time as they reach their destination, in which case they can completely expose themselves to the sun and allow themselves to be caressed by the rays of the sunlight. So what we have over here is a paradigm in which the Almighty has invested, programmed every good deed, every act which is consistent with His Ratzon in such a way that given all of its predicates, meaning the Kavana, the Ahava, the Ahavas Hashem, the love of Hashem, the Yiras Hashem, the reverence which is invested in that act, the care, the meticulousness, the preparation, all of the things that go into that, that the
that the character of the exclamation, Hashem, I want to be close to you, Hashem, I yearn for a relationship with you, which is expressed by this mitzvah, will carry them precisely in that measure. Closer to Hashem. Closer to Hashem, because what Hashem does is reaches out and through the mitzvah invests them with the progress, with the excellence that's inherent in this act. There is a direct cause and effect relationship. The soul of that excellence is Hashem himself. The responsible party for that excellence is man's decision to define that deed or that act such that what it represents and what its effect will be is directly and causally related to what he does. The difference is, or I should say, the way in which the two systems really coalesce is that while there is a direct and, if you will, mechanistic relationship between that specific good that we are now referring to, which becomes part of us, and our act, that is, that there is a direct cause and effect relationship, that the end of that, that the goal of that, is something which is intensely personal. Because the goal is that we're going to have a relationship with Hashem. The end of this is that we're going to be able to experience this intimacy with Hashem. So while there may be this mechanistic principle which carries us in some way which corresponds with how we have acted, this is not identical with, this does not imply impersonality, because the end of all of that is something which is uniquely and intensely personal. And that is that we are going to have a relationship with Hashem which is loving and caring and intimate and infused with the greatest personal affection and interest possible. So there are, in fact, other good things that happen. The world is illuminated with all kinds of blessing by the good that we do. We have, in fact, created good forces. We are the creators of these positive vibes which now become a factor in the universe in which we live. But the most important goal, the most important end, the thing that we really strive for, that in which Hashem is Geimel Tov, in which Hashem is actually the provider of, the rewarder of good to those who do good, that good is Hashem himself. That good is this personal relationship. And so my sense of these positions is that they are not exclusive of one another, but they in fact really do dovetail. They really do become, at a certain point, they become one. We do that which is right, we do that which is good, that which finds favor in Hashem's sight, that which Hashem has enunciated in His Torah. We follow His will, and we do so with the maturity that leaves behind this self-absorption, and which begins to address the infinitely more meaningful good which exists in a relationship. And our performance of all of Teilam Mitzvahs then becomes something which calls out to Hashem and says, Hashem, I want to be close to you. Hashem, I want a relationship. I yearn, I long for a relationship with you. And how seriously we take that statement and make that exclamation is how seriously Hashem takes it, and that's how far we travel in coming closer to Him. We are, in fact, the ones who are the architects of and the cause of the good which we receive. But that good which we receive is not something independent of Hashem or exterior to Hashem. It is actually a personal relationship. To that extent, it is that personal relationship which makes all the difference.